here.
Okay, so we are rolling. We're recording. So welcome back, everyone, to the Universal Love Movement podcast show. This is your host, Dr. Carl S. Moore. And as you know, we have a special series, Accessing Ability. And we started off with three parts. First episode, I was able to dig into some of the reason for this, this special series, when this podcast is brought to you by Universal Love Unlimited, the umbrella piece, the umbrella company. And we had a really great conversation with Laura Pipe. We had a really great conversation with Gabriella Waters. And now this gentleman, I really am really thrilled to introduce him because I personally owe a lot to Dr. Z, to Todd, because I remember when I was doing hip hop pedagogy workshops at the Lilly conference, and he came in and kind of saw me in action, and it's crazy just that so many years later. So Todd, welcome to the show. You're an associate professor at UNC. Tell us a little bit about you. I know you're an academic powerhouse. You're a beacon of knowledge. The Lilly conferences, you penned numerous books, spearheaded the really changing the educational landscape. So thank you and welcome to the Access and Ability podcast series.
Appreciate that, Carl. And I do remember that Lilly conference. That must have been, how long ago was that? It's like 15 years ago? That couldn't have been that long ago.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been that long ago.
Yeah.
So I can tell everyone there was this kid who came up as a grad student who was doing a hip hop, something with hip hop and education. And I told the conference coordinator, I said, this looks really interesting. And I went down to what was supposed to be a roundtable discussion, which means there was about 15 different people having table discussions, and you're supposed to have, I don't know, 6 to 7 people sitting at the table having a conversation. And Carl's over there with, I don't know, maybe 30 people around the table all crowded around. And I listened to him kind of hold stage with that group. And then I went back to the conference coordinator and I said, this is a guy I'm going to keep my eye on, and he is going to amount to something, and we're going to be friends.
And the rest is history.
I appreciate you being my friend.
Well, no, I do as well. We've had plenty of conversations, Todd, and I really value your time, because I know that you are in the middle of a bunch of stuff, as all of our guests are. They're doing a lot. But in this episode, the title is "We Are All on the Spectrum." And when I first was thinking about this idea of really having more of an asset approach to everyone and putting everyone in the same kind of category of being, neurodiverse, right? Instead of thinking some people are and some people aren't. I'm really thankful because I knew that I could talk to you about it. I knew that it would be something that, okay, Todd will understand me. He'll understand. But not only that, when we challenge these traditional notions, I knew that you would be able to give it more depth and in some ways validate some of, because sometimes you can have just these, ideas, these harebrained ideas, but because of your depth of field and really working in, the area, learning science, educational development, et cetera, really want to have a conversation with you about it. So Todd, briefly, I think this is really important. We're going to talk about, this idea of not really having a fixed view on intelligence and things of that sort and challenging traditional notions. But could you tell us about how you started your journey and what drew you to the realm of teaching and learning and educational development? Because the folks can Google you, just, as they can Google anyone else here on this show. But tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, Carl, that's great. And I'm laughing when you say they can Google me, just as a quick little side note. I have done quite a bit, and I'm not trying to brag about this one. This is actually a little bit of imposter syndrome. So I've learned a long time ago there's a fine line between justifying your existence and bragging. And so I always try to justify my existence. So I've written 5 books in the last 5 years. But the reason I mention this is that my grandson, whose last name is Muzzin, in a small school in Michigan, the teacher said when they're in middle school, everybody find somebody in your family and just write about them, whatever you can find. And Matthew said he raised his hand and he said to the teacher, I'm not sure what to write about my grandpa because there's so much out on the web. And the teacher walked over and said, Matthew, your grandfather is not Todd Zakrajsek. And she knew me because of one of the books.
Okay.
And so it's so funny. The reason I mentioned this is that the next time I saw Matthew, we held the book and we took a picture so that he could give the teacher the picture. And then I signed the book for him. So I thought that was fascinating. So anyway, that was the funny part about that one. And yes, for the neurodiversity, I have quite a bit in my family. Actually, I should word that differently. We all have a lot of neurodiversity
in our family.
Because when you take the number of neurons we have and how they fire and everything, there are no two people in the world who have ever been exactly the same. So we are all diverse. And so that's how I kind of take the perspective from that.
Oh, I love that. So first, so what you're doing, Todd, is you're admitting that you're rock star status then, right? If you're taking pictures, and things like that, that's what rock stars do. Like, hey, look, I met, you know, Bon Jovi or Jay-Z or whatever. So that, thanks for subtly admitting that that's part of what's happening with your life now. But what you mentioned, what you mentioned about your neurodiversity and us all having it in all of our families, I really do think that it's a shift of a paradigm shift that is, it's kind of growing and emerging in some areas, but then it's still really fixed and built into the floorboards in other areas. So you've been a proponent of the idea of, kind of just understanding the abilities and the capacities, and that's what this podcast series is about. Could you dive deeper into some of your insights? Like, how does this perspective, or and your perspective as I've seen in action, challenge traditional notions of intelligence and ability?
But I think the biggest one, and this is really, really tricky to kind of sort out in my own head too, is I'm just going to backpedal just a little here in terms of, in psychology, there's long, long time now has been this whole debate about labeling and not labeling.
Okay.
So if we label somebody as having some kind of an affliction, let's just call it, I don't know, Asperger's or autism, the moment you say this person has autism or this person has autism-like tendencies, that's the difference right there. Because if you basically say this person is autistic, that's different from this person behaves in a way as this concept of autism is. But when you label it, as soon as people talk to them, they start thinking about them in that realm. However, if you don't label them, then it's very difficult to communicate.
Right.
So how do you say this individual has a very hard time maintaining eye contact, understanding facial nonverbal expressions, and these types of decisions if you don't have the verbiage? And so I've always lived my life in this little fine line of, why can't we use a label, like, for Carl working at a certain place, or however I would describe Carl, use that as kind of a label, but then step back from it and say, that doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter that you're on the autism spectrum, but it's nice to know that so that I can understand some of the characteristics I might see. And I think the tricky spot is all this baggage comes with the labels. So I don't see it as the labels problem. I see it as the people who are using the label to put people into boxes. That's the tricky one. There's a movie I watched one time, I thought it was so fascinating, except I don't remember the name of the movie now. Pretty sure it was Shirley MacLaine. And it was a family that was fighting, and this matriarch, she makes a comment about somebody that's pretty discriminatory statement. And someone in the family says, "Mom, you shouldn't put people into boxes." And she said, I love this line. She said, "I don't put people into boxes, I just label them."
Wow.
And that made me just stop and think, well, wait a minute, you're not the one who puts the person in the box.
Right.
You just label it, but then who puts them in that box? How do they end up in there?
Keep going, Todd. That's a different twist.
Yeah, so anyway, the concept was, is why can't we do both? And I'm going to slide over real quickly to where this hit home for me one time. We had an individual in our department, we had a 10-person department, psychology department, Southern Oregon. That was Southern Oregon State College. And I remember this young lady who was complaining about two guys in class who were picking on her. And I said, I will talk to them. And then the next week, there was a weekly class, an evening class, she came up and she said, did you talk to them? And I said, yeah, I talked to them. And they said that they had been picking on you. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping it's just not a misunderstanding. And she said, well, today they were yelling at me and I shouldn't be persecuted based on my religious beliefs. That, of course, brings up a different concept. And I thought, this individual has got some mental health challenges and probably is not taking her medications. And so I wanted to talk to the department about this. So how can we help her? And as soon as I started to talk about her and just the concept, the department chair said, don't say her name. And I said, why not? And she said, as soon as you say her name, everyone's going to be biased against her. And that's not fair. And I said, well, wait a minute. It's not fair to whom? If we don't all get together and figure out how to help her, she's not going to get help. The fact that you're going to be biased against her as soon as you hear her name,
see?
Who she is, and this, that's not her problem. That's your problem. And we went kind of round and round on that. So how do you help people if you can't talk about them? And, you know, that's the challenge.
I really appreciate that a ton. You know, we were, when I had Professor Waters on yesterday, at the same time equally interested and invested in learning about artificial intelligence and machine learning, but then also neurodiversity because of some of, you know, she has her whole story with that. But that, this idea that the labels actually automatically give you something negative doesn't necessarily have to be the case, right? We don't have to. What I hear you saying is we need to associate with something, right? Categorize in some type of way, but how you treat a person and how you think about them and how you actually relate or provide them education or whatever, that's the piece, right? So not even the labels themselves. Am I understanding that correctly? Because this is interesting.
Yeah, well, I think that's the challenge. I could get away from this completely and just use the label of a child. Somebody says, how many children do you have? In fact, this is nice. Let's get away from mental illness or mental health and mental categorization and think about kids, right? If I ask you how many kids do you have, you tell me, right? So I'm Chuck Carl, get personal a minute here and only just the number here. How many children do you have?
Is that you want me to answer this right now, the kids?
I'm actually a literal, yeah. Really
I have two. I have two children. I have that's it. Two children.
Two children. See, and you were very tempted to say what gender they were.
Yeah, right? I was going to tell you their ages and everything.
Yep. And so that ages and gender comes along with you're going to help fill out this category for me and give me just a little bit more information.
Yep.
And as soon as you give me ages help me in a sense that then we may have different ideas on what children means. You might say, yes, I have two children. They are 32 and 40 years old. And a point I might say, well, wait a minute, those aren't really children, are they? And you say, well, they're always my kids. That's how we're labeling things differently based on who we are and our experience with them. But we're also trying to communicate to others. So when I hear you have two kids, I assume they're younger. And we make all of these assumptions, but I don't need to automatically assume, oh, so they're cognitively limited in how much they can process. Their worldview is probably less than it would be for an adult. See, all these limitations I can just throw into there because I've heard they're children. Or I can just say, oh, you've got children. That's a label that helps me understand they are young humans, and that comes with a certain things. But those don't have to be bad things. They can just, say, okay, now I have information. And this is actually, I love talking to you, Carl, because I've never thought about it this way before. I actually love talking about it in the realm of kids because we don't have to come with all that stigma that we do as soon as we mention, you know, someone on the autism spectrum. And so that concept, in fact, this is a funny side note here, and I don't have the reference for it today with Carl. I never know what I'm going to be talking about.
Right. We're going to go all over the place.
there's a person who wrote an article years ago in a psychiatry realm that talked about this affliction that all humans have and they described childhood. And then it came in all medical terms. Like, we all have this affliction. We all persevere with it. Excuse me. The good news is almost everyone outgrows it. And so they talked about childhood as if it was a disorder. And I just thought that was hilarious because that's what they were doing. They were putting all of that labeled stigmatism onto childhood. Like, how do we treat it? What do we do with it? And, you know, I think we do that too much with diversity, neurodiversity. We talk about individuals as having either limitations, well, usually limitations, which is so sad, but the challenges they have. And at the same time, in the same universe, it's nice to know what those challenges are so that we can be more patient with a person or help them if they need it. We might lend more of a hand.
Yeah. So. I love the hand thing. That's also come up in terms of great grace, having that grace. And a lot of what I really appreciate it and what you're sharing is it's it really does mirror what we, you know, I've used to be a lot heavier in terms of the DEI kind of training space and social justice space. And when we look at, you know, having folks are categorized, we all have these different, you know, identities, you know, aspects of ourselves that, and that's fine. You know, it's not that, you know, whether it's be your race, class, gender, all these things, it's the sometimes people stereotyping. And what I hear you saying is, and it may not always be kind of like a stereotype per se, like in the most a traditional sense, but people are assigning whether it's like a positive or negative value or attaching certain meaning to certain elements of a person's label. And that is where some of the problem comes in. Well, what we wouldn't say even call it a problem. That's where some of the issues come in when it comes to intelligence or neurodiversity. It's like what people are assuming about a person and what they can do and their capabilities. And it's just, it is really interesting when we think about our society. There's, we have this, even if like, let's, it's, even if we were bad, even if it was something that we all agreed on, that was like not necessarily as ideal, what we do after that, that was another layer that you provided. What do we do? Okay, if we see that this is not functioning in this way, do we help? Do we push aside? Do we feel, even if, do we feel bad for? And but knowing that what you said at the very beginning, that we all plot in a sense, maybe I'm paraphrasing, that we all are varied. There's this concept that I wanted to chat with you about as it relates to this. And I mentioned it in my kickoff episode where it's like, and I was like, I need Todd here for this. So if you kind of like have, and you probably can rephrase this for me as you usually do with these things. If you have like ability on one, you know, kind of access in an environment, right? On another, and what you're asked to do, right? What a person's actually asked to do, I think it really, it varies greatly, right? If you're thinking, you know, this person's ability to do this in whatever environment, this environment piece has been something I've really been thinking deeply on as it relates to some spectrum of intelligence or ability. Okay, but what are you asked to do and what's the environment? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think, Carl, that's a good one too. I like this stuff. Yeah, first of all, that kind of tagging into that concept of the abilities in different realms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a psychologist. In psychology, there was a phrase we used a long time ago, we don't use anymore, called idiot savant.
Okay.
So, you know that term? You ever heard of an idiot savant?
Yeah, yep, yep.
So many people have heard about this. The concept is the idiot part of it, and when you say idiot, anybody who's listening, anybody who kind of tenses up and thinks that's a negative word, I'll come right back to that. Idiot originally was less than 20, I believe it was, on an IQ scale. There was an idiot, and then there was people who were, we'll use the other labels right now, let's go with this one. But these individuals who were less than 20 on an IQ score, which means they had very limited cognitive functioning, oftentimes would pick some area, and they were a savant in that they just knew that area like just really, really well. Okay. So you might be, I mean, and it could be something like dinosaurs, but there's some kids when they're very young who will get fascinated with the dinosaurs, and they will tell you everything about a dinosaur, everything that's known out there, which means they're really, really knowledgeable about dinosaurs. But if they really struggle with everything else because their IQ is so low, then this concept is, well, they're an idiot, but they're also a savant. They're really good in one area.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing I want to do, because this is going to be real complicated here, I'm going to weave it all back together. That concept of an idiot's interesting because at one time it was a label. It was just, if you said, oh, by the way, this is my friend, she's an idiot. At the point, and anybody right now, just hold on for just a second.
Right.
That was just basically saying, this is an individual with less cognitive functioning. When you talk to her, if she doesn't respond in a way that you normally have people respond to you, she is not angry with you. She is not frustrated with you. She is not ignoring you. She has challenges in processing information. She's an idiot. Here's the great part. All that was a label, the same as if I said that, you know, somebody was a male or somebody was old or somebody was whatever race. It's just, this is information for you. However, society doesn't value the types of things. In fact, they actually chastise the types of things an individual with a very low IQ would have, those characteristics. And because we don't like those characteristics and we hear them associated with this word idiot, pretty soon we start using that word in a very derogatory way. Oh man, quit acting like an idiot. Don't act like a person with an IQ less than 20. And once we decide that that is rude, then we can't call a person with an IQ less than 20 an idiot because that's derogatory. So we come up with a new term. And we keep changing these terms, but when you say this person's learning impaired, which sounds better than saying they're stupid, pretty soon learning impaired becomes a negative label. We have to change the underlining how we value the person and their characteristics, and not take that as because it's negative, we just associate it with a label. The label's not the problem, it's the way people perceive it.
Wow.
So coming all the way back, backpedaling here, is we now have labels that we can use, which we have to be very careful of how that's all handled, but we also have to keep in mind that everybody has a talent in some area, and everybody has struggles in some areas. And so, I mean, there are certain things that I do very, very well. There's other things that I'm really, really challenged at. And so this idea that holistically you belong in this category is frustrating.
Wow.
So there's a whole lot wrapped into one thing there. Sorry, my brain gets...
No, don't... Please do not apologize.
A little ADD, which would... Let's see how this works. I can tell you, in fact, I'm not even a little, I'm a lot ADD. So I can tell you I'm ADD and you can say, oh good, that's helpful for understanding how he processes things and thinks about stuff outside the box. But it doesn't have to negatively kind of come rushing in of, you got ADD, we got to be careful here.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Todd, because as soon as you say that, I'm like, oh, okay, he has superpowers. And I already know about your superpowers. He can think about all these things at one time, you know, and switch gears because of his neural activity. And, it's a beautiful what you just provided, because everything ties together what you were mentioning earlier about the boxes, right? It's like they've boxed a person in because of that one part. They boxed them. They've created that box and said, hey, you're in here and that's it. You don't have any other abilities anywhere else. So. How we value people is huge.
Carl, I'm just going to jump in there and say what you just said is great too. And I saw that Sharon gave us a thumbs up. So thank you, Sharon. This is really helpful. The feedback's great. Podcasts are always tricky because you're just talking.
Right.
Two individuals having a conversation. And I love the live part here because now people are thinking, you know what? I kind of like that concept. But what I wanted to point out is what you just said is so cool, Carl. When people see boxes, they see side, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's you're boxed in. Even the phrase, somebody is boxed in.
Right.
But you could put a person into a category, and we call it a box, but a category where we say this has got like all these abilities. And that's why I really like you. You don't see disabilities, you see abilities. And so the ADD is a great perspective. And as far as I'm concerned, is if you can hold on to things enough that you don't just scatter all over the place and lose thoughts, you tend to be looking at stuff from all these different angles. And that's why people on the neurodiversity concept, the spectrum that people talk about, like being on the autism spectrum, they look at things in such amazing ways. I have learned more from my daughter who's on the spectrum than I probably have from any other human being. She is, literally one of my best teachers ever. And other individuals see limitation after limitation. I see just new perspectives at looking at things that we can all benefit from.
Wow.
This is before I finish with this one, by the way, and I'm pulling this back together too, is she's the one that after I think it was third grade she came home, maybe fourth grade. And I said, how was class? The first day of class, so exciting. She came home. So how was your first day of class? She says, Dad, it's a syllabuster. Syllabuster.
Wow.
Who comes up with that?
Right.
And it was true. I just laughed immediately because she summarized everything that most of us experience on the first day of class with a word that I had never heard before and was not in the dictionary. But that was her looking at the world in a different way. And she's been put in a box where people see limitations. You would look at her and see extra abilities. And this whole concept of looking at this whole spectrum concept. It's, you know, where do we drop somebody and how do we perceive them and interact with them based on that?
That's so beautiful. And that gets at the, and I'm so thankful and appreciative that you being in the same frequency of that, because as we progress and everyone sees it exactly like you just mentioned, that's like, I know, and I was gonna say my job is done. I would feel really great, because it's this value that we don't have in some people, because we think that they have less of a value, right? Because of their variation, right? Because of their, what was the concept we were talking about before? It's gifts differently, or being differently abled, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's huge, you know, because this, you also made me think, there's so many things firing off my brain right now. The boxes are interesting, because you know the concept we have when we say, like, think outside of the box, and we really value that,
yes.
but then we don't at the same time. It's a big yarn ball here with that.
But see, isn't that great? This is why I love to chat with you, too. Look at the colloquialisms we use. Think outside the box.
Right.
Just saying to somebody, hey, we got a bunch of money coming. Let's think outside the box. Right? What does that really mean?
Right.
The sense that we typically think within a box, so we have these limitations. And so now what I'm going to ask you to do is not go with your normal limitations that we all have and expand our view
exactly.
into other areas. We shouldn't need to say think outside the box. We could just
already
come up with some new concepts here.
Yeah.
And the think outside the box has this little hint to it that it's like, you know, we don't put people into boxes, you know, but they tend to be there. So, and I don't want to rain on your parade, my good friend.
No, go ahead.
But
go ahead.
When you say work, you know, your work done, oh my gosh, Carl, your work is going to become more and more important as we move forward, because on the spectrum of everything going on in the world out there, I'm not seeing more and more inclusive thinking.
You're gonna spoil my Thursday. I appreciate that.
Sorry. Well, here's a prelude to Thursday. Let's think about what happens if people are building bigger and bigger boxes.
You know, bigger boxes with very fixed and definitive and deterministic ways of viewing. You know, one of the things, and this gets us off subject, but also on the subject at the same time more, when computers are doing more, like, you know, AIs, we're leveraging them more, our ability to be curious and think outside the box becomes even more so a value, in my opinion. And one of the things that I'm hoping we can do is start to train, or maybe it's, I don't know if the word's train, you can help me with a better word, but really open that up as a kid, you know, that curiosity that you're having and this, because I think that'll get us there a little bit. But if you're like told that you're not awesome, or if you're told that you're less than, you're not as gonna be as curious, and you're not gonna value yourself. And this really does tie in, though, Todd, to the concept of, you know, this universal love, you know, Unlimited, or whether it's the podcast when it's universal love movie, because it's like, if you love yourself, it's the number one thing you learn in terms of self-esteem. The more you value yourself, the more you can value others. So I'm hoping that everyone realizing that, like, whether it be we're all on a spectrum or everyone has abilities, that then they can be that much more gracious, or have that much more grace with another person. Like, okay, you know what? I'm awesome. And that's what we do in Strengths Finder. Like, okay, I have these strengths or these innate abilities. You might have some as well. But if you don't think you have them, or you were like slapped around by the education system or your rearing, it's a little hard. It's a little harder, you know? So, but yes, like, to your point, lots of work ahead to do. And you know, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. So before I forget about this, so two quick things came to mind real quickly. That whole concept of don't brag about yourself, right? Oh, don't be a bragger. Don't kind of self-promote and everything else. We really instill that, at least in our culture, that you shouldn't say all wonderful things about yourself, because it looks like you're trying to make. So I think, to me, what that means is you're trying to set yourself higher than somebody else. If I tell you something like, I feel like I'm a good writer, and so I will tell you, I think I'm a pretty good writer. I'm working on the book right now, by the way, on classroom assessment techniques with Tom Angelo, and I'm excited about it. It'll be 5 books in 5 years. But if I start talking about written 5 books in 5 years, people are like, okay, we get it. You write a lot. Why do we automatically take this assumption that I'm trying to say that I'm better than someone?
Wow.
I'm just trying to say, this is what I do. This is my passion. This is an area I really like. But as soon as I say I've done this, I've had people go, oh yeah, so you're one of those eggheads. You write a lot. And so that's the tricky spot we get into. And so if you can't, like you're saying, if you don't like yourself, how would you expect someone else to like you? So we should have this, but we should be able to talk about ourselves in non-bragging ways, which is, this is what I'm doing. Let me be excited about it. But I don't at times, because that's, other people see that as me trying to put myself above them. And before I forget, because these are my fleeting thoughts, when you were talking about having different areas, and we talked about boxing people, I had this great image. When you move, if you're going to move and you have like, you have the fancy pants, stemware and glasses and goblets and things, the moving box that has those little air, the little cross sections in it, right? All the little cross sections of the cardboard.
Yep.
And you can put each glass in a section and then they don't clunk against each other. Right? When you peer into that box, I think that's how the world sees people.
Ooh.
It's just like all those little boxes making up one big box. And we don't want those areas clunking against each other, and we don't take that interrelatedness into mind. We just say, oh, you do this and you're high on this one, you're low on this one, you have this, you don't have that. I think we're just peering into a box for stemware.
Wow, that's an interesting concept. So when we look at that box, and then it has those other little sub compartments or whatever, like sub compartments in it. Sheesh. I really.
Yeah, go
ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that I hadn't thought about it in that way before, but I mean, that's one that we tend to take the most salient one. So someone's on the spectrum. But as soon as we start talking about them, then we think, okay, they're on the spectrum. They're also African-American, they're also male, they're also young. Mm-hmm. Those are just all those little boxes.
Yep. And there's a tool that we use that some, not we'll say people, it's the social identity wheel. It's all these little, and it's a wheel, but it could be very well boxes to help folks really understand. I used to do this activity where we kind of like reclaim, we have to like reclaim some of the aspects of us and like rid ourselves of the negative parts. So it's say, I am a, what do you call it? I am an educator, or no, I'm a writer, but I'm not a, whatever that negative word is that you said people said you were earlier, or, I am a college student, but I'm not a partier, or whatever it is, or I'm an African American, but I'm not whatever that kind of, and have to reclaim because of all of these negative labels that they have on us. And there's a song, Todd, I'm pretty sure you know this song. I don't know. It's like little boxes all made of ticky-tacky, and they're all just the same. It's like, it was the beginning of a show, and I used to play this song about these little boxes. And it was talking about the, it was basically one of those songs that was kind of like, a dig at society when we started to have like homes in suburbia that were all like the same, and they were like, say they were ticky tacky, and they were, I'm gonna have to look that up, but this whole idea of boxes is huge, and I think that can be a whole entire thing in itself. So Todd, this has been really, really great so far, and I want to be able to provide space to extract and just really even dialogue about, extract from your brain your whole thing, but then also dialogue about what do we see. What do you see if you change the world as you are doing bit by bit, but given your experience on what we can do to shift, so actions as educators, as whether you're in an official sense or in any other way, in terms of shifting these societal perspectives on intelligence and ability, how can we really address this? What are some steps that you think people can take generally, but then in certain areas?
The one I've pushed for the longest time, I think, is that concept of be careful about having a label automatically take on some negative characteristic to it. I don't know why, but for some reason people will slide real quickly to the negative side of any kind of label that's out there. And so just being careful about that, because we do have to categorize things. That's how we make sense of the world around us. And I guess the more I think about this, and I love your all on the spectrum concept there, Carl, because everything that you interact with in the world on every dimension is on some kind of a spectrum. You know, different. I've got a bottle of water here. People will say, oh, I like this water, but I like Deer Park. I don't like, I don't know, one of the other ones. I can't even think of it now because I've got a Deer Park in front of me. But all of a sudden, it's just like what I like, don't like. And it's like, ooh, I don't like that kind. And so I think we have to be very careful with what those mean. And so if we can get rid of that, because we have to, and this is the part, we all have to discriminate. And I love to do this when I teach my intro psych classes. I'll tell the students, like, discrimination, is it good or bad? And the students will, like, look at me, you know, like I'm a little bit crazy. Like, why would you ask me if discrimination is good? And then I have to tell them. And so everybody be very careful if you're kind of half listening, because I don't want my name associated with something that you think is negative here.
Right, listen all the way.
What I'm saying.
Please.
But we all have to discriminate. It's like discriminating between what you can eat and not eat. If you see broken glass and you think, oh, I wonder if that's tasty. It's a good thing to discriminate between something you can eat and can't eat. When you're walking down a street, you can discriminate by just basically saying, is this a street I want to walk down or not want to walk down? We don't have to have negativity about it. If you're in, I was just talking about having a conference in Detroit. If you're walking down a very dark street in Detroit or in New Orleans, and there's a group of four or five people standing on the corner, and you think to yourself, I don't think I'm going to walk down there. It doesn't have to be that you don't value other humans and that you're prejudging those people. You're making a decision based on a probability of what might happen. Maybe it's better if I stick to this well-lit street. So we make these discriminations all the time. The brain can't stop from, and I can go all the way back to Gestalt psychology and why we do this and how we do this. It's automatic. It's what you do with it once you see it, though. So your brain's going to make this differentiation. I call it discrimination. Now we can call it differentiation. Your brain's going to do that. Now what do you do with it? If somebody's applying for a job and they when you look at them, you think, oh, this is an older person. I don't think I'm going to hire this person because old people tend to get sick. They tend to move slow. They tend to think slow. You know, so all of a sudden I'm making all these statements. The discrimination or the differentiation of seeing that they're old, I can't stop that. I can't look at a person and not notice that they're older. What I can do is stop the negativity that might come with that. And so as you're saying, Carl, it's like, what am I trying to do? What would I love to do? Is I'd love to have people see automatically what are a couple of the good things. By the way, if you have a job and you have a person apply who's older, you can also think they tend to like be more dependable in terms of when they make a commitment, they're going to stick with it. They've learned in life it's a good idea to show up when you say you're going to show up, because otherwise people think differently if you don't. They are individuals actually who tend to miss less days. And some of these individuals are very strong. And I've seen some 18-year-olds that cannot lift as much as some 80-year-olds.
Right.
So instead of seeing that negativity, I would just look at a person and say, okay, they're an older person. Let's talk about what this job entails and see if you can do it.
I love that. I really do. The honesty, right, that's needed for people to recognize that. And the word discriminate is really charged, right? So I see what you're saying about like, hey, don't associate this with you. It's like everyone has to make decisions or associations to make sense of the world, right? You know, should I go around this or go around that? And you're saying that people do it. And as they make these decisions to make sure that you're not just automatically, and that does take work, right? You know, it takes reflection, it takes exposure. But it, number one, it takes honesty, right? Like you're trying to, you know, what you're bringing to the surface, like, hey, just admit, you're going to make some discrimination or some associations based off of what you see in front of you, but let's not be negative. But if you start with, hey, I don't discriminate, or, you know, being adverse to the word or the realness about it, you're not going to be as likely to check yourself or self-correct. And reprogram, because I'm big into, like, you know, continuously, you know, unpacking and trying to reprogram as much as we can. You may not even need to reprogram if you just reprogram how you act and if you value them and how you treat folks, and all the information's there, right? It actually can be useful at certain times. But we've been bombarded by so much information around like certain groups, like you said, older people, of course, you know, historically marginalized folks, people of color, different groups that people are just very, very, you know, of course, as we should be. But it's a subject that I think that this conversation, it's a big yarn ball in terms of like those people who are valued and not valued. So I really do appreciate you bringing that in, because we have a lot of work to do. It's 2023, but we still have much work to do.
Yeah, so this is, and I love what you said, Carl, in terms of pulling that together. I love that. I mean, you're really good at this. But it's funny, it's so hard to just default to something positive. So let's just say, for instance, I mean, watch this one. So I say, hey, Carl, you want to go out to dinner tomorrow night? If you say, sure, I say, okay, I'll meet you. I'll tell you what, I'll meet you at the McDonald's over there on 4th and G Street. Mm-hmm. And if I say, we're going to have dinner together, okay, I'll meet you at McDonald's. I would say there's most people, I would ask you, I mean, think about what's the first thing if I say, let's meet at McDonald's and have dinner.
Well, you know me in terms of my eating habits. So first thing I'm thinking, McDonald's?
Yeah, right.
Am I going to get some real food there? Nothing against McDonald's.
Yeah, it's real food, right?
Yeah, why
don't we meet McDonald's? But look what happens there. And I know you're a little hesitant there because, you know, when we're talking about this concept, it feels like it could be a trap.
It's a trap. Right. I would think, hey, is he being cheap? Is he being a cheap dinner date? You know, maybe that was something that came up.
Is just for the heck of it. And I've never used this example before, but I love this kind of concept right now. If I said, hey, Carl, you want to have dinner? You say, sure. And if I say, how about if we meet at McDonald's? And if your immediate response was, oh, you know what? That would be great if we're really in a hurry, but why don't we go to a place where we can take some more time? So instead of saying that's awful food or it's not real food, okay, just recognize it, that it's sometimes, and I mean, people can be all they want about terrible McDonald's, but most people, although I'm going to say their sales have been dipping quite a bit because younger folks are not interested in that kind of food. But the concept of recognizing that sometimes we just need some calories to get to the next thing.
Right.
That's what we want. I don't want a Ruth Chris Steakhouse if I've got 15 minutes to get lunch. And this concept of thinking about when is something's characteristics valuable and when are they a situation where they're not valued at this moment, I can't use it. But instead of kind of wrapping it together and saying that makes it a good package or a bad package, if we take Ruth Chris Steakhouse and McDonald's, each one of them serves a different purpose and they would be valuable at different times. Again, a fancy steakhouse is going to be really valuable to me if you and I have 2 hours or 3 hours to go have dinner. It's going to cost the two of us a couple hundred dollars minimum. And by the end of the evening, we'll have this wonderful evening with these really neat flavors and everything. That's an experience. But if we've got 15 minutes to grab something to eat because we're late for a meeting, that experience has no value to us.
Wow. Todd, this is big. This is that. This is the space. I really appreciate this concept or this example here, because it really does take away all of. It helps you take away all those judgments and things more, and pinpoints it to like, hey, this is for this purpose. Let's look at the value. This is big. I think it can go a long way with folks in terms of getting out, like really test getting out of their own mind. So yeah, I really appreciate it. I'm going to continue to use it.
Well, I think that's really helpful. This is the problem I think we run into. So I've got family members who are extremely conservative. I'm not extremely conservative. I'm sometimes considered to be a little too liberal. But the concept that when we're talking, that's part of what we're now, everybody just gets red in their face so fast because they look at the other person and I got to use the words carefully here. It's not that I don't value it. It's the position you're holding right now is different from the position I want because it's very different. And I see this in a different way. I think that your position has no value. And when I say has no value, I'm thinking no value at all to anybody, anywhere, for anything. It's like that's a valueless position instead of, at this moment where I am in my life and what I think is important, that isn't going to be something that I would be in line with. But I could, and this is back to what we say all the time, I can see from your perspective of where you would like that.
Yep.
And bro, so if we can do that about McDonald's, maybe we can do it about other things too, and then just have conversations.
100%. The relativity. It's it being so relative, situational, contextual in that environment. There's so many like layers, and we don't give any. Well, I guess I'll be speak in growth, kind of towards growth narratives. I'm excited about us giving more space to that, right? Because that's what our world needs, right? We have so much variation. So this is big. And so it helps us get outside of the boxes more. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So back to all the way, I mean, wrapping this thing back all the way around, because we're about 10 minutes too, so we got to do this big circle. And those of you who've been listening, if you're not a little ADD and on the spectrum, this could make your head hurt. but this concept of coming all the way back, when you have somebody on the spectrum and we see certain characteristics and we say, ooh, I would not like that. I wouldn't like to be like that. I wouldn't like to have that limitation. I wouldn't like to have whatever. Then, yeah, it doesn't have value to you in the way you see the world right now, but that doesn't mean it fails to have value for the other person. What somebody would say is being shy is, you know, somebody says, wow, you're really shy. That would, you know, I wouldn't want to be shy. I love to get out there and really meet everybody. Okay, that's fine, but why would we not value shyness? I mean, in some respects, in some areas, that has a lot of value to it. So, I mean, you could actually be in some cultures where a shy person would be seen as being respectful, and a person who is not shy would be seen as somebody who is not respectful, because the shy person's letting the other person talk, taking a few minutes, processing it, while somebody else is like running off at the mouth and jumping around from person to person. It's like, ooh, that individual needs to settle down.
Yeah.
And you put them in a different culture, the shy person's like, wow, you need to get out of your shell. And so, you know, we love to just do this all the time, I guess. Looking for the negativity instead of looking for the positive. And that's all you, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Forever. Look for the positivity.
I'm trying. It's my third signature theme in my StrengthsFinder. And now they gave me I'm unapologetically positive now. You know, they say cup half full, half empty. It's like at least a 50% chance that it's positive. And I'm leaning into that. And I really do think what you provide now, what a, and Ty, you can admit this, what an amazing perspective. And maybe I'll use the least judgmental words. How constructive would it be for humanity, right? If people are thinking in such a way, right? Because we can agree that if people were thinking more in judgments and in the opposite, that those are destructive in many ways. So if we just take a lot of the other stuff and the judgments and labels off of it, what I really am about, also having like the strategic mind, is for the outcomes that we seek. Do we want society to grow more closer bond, and do we want people to become more, and for me, I'm about, you know, community and humanizing spaces. If we want that, everything you're talking about makes more humanizing. So at the end of the day, if we're thinking of, okay, what would make what is your compass? And my compass is humanizing spaces. So everything you're saying is really helping humanizing spaces. And one of the things that I think hasn't, and this is the last concept we'll talk about, we only have like 3 minutes and then we'll close out, this idea of IQ. You had mentioned before about IQ, and we were talking about boxes before, and just wanted to make sure that folks can have, because we know through neuroplasticity now there is this whole thing, some people smart and some people not being smart, and with this IQ piece, how are we thinking about how people are smart and not smart now, as we kind of round out this topic of, you know, us all being, you know, we're all being on a spectrum. What do you say to that in terms of helping people think about that? Because we know that was in another box, right? You know, the IQ piece, and there are plenty of folks out there that were thinking that they're not smart. And that's why intelligence reframed was really awesome for me, even though it's not empirically proven or whatever, just to help folks recognize that they may be smart, like you said earlier. So IQ, Todd, let's talk a little bit about that before we close out.
Yeah, well, I mean, verbiage is interesting, Carl, because the concept of smart, not smart, I mean, what would one mean by not smart? right?
Right.
I don't know what not smart is. I guess what I understand is you may not be as show as much affinity or really as much interest in an area as somebody else. So maybe you don't know as much about it. But I don't know. That word not smart. Smart. See the labeling. They come in my head. And that's me now. Now I'm the one saying, oh, not smart feels like this thing. So I think it comes back to that. I mean, when we talk about smart, not smart, everything seems, we do binary a lot, which we have to, and we've talked about that earlier too. But the concept of the spectrum, if you think about a spectrum, and I think this is what I'll leave my thought with, I hope this ties in with what you're saying. If we have a spectrum where there's like almost nothing of something to like a huge, huge preponderance of it, and this could be, I don't know, where you draw your energy from, it could be how much you know about trains, it could be how well you are at reading other people's emotions, whatever the spectrum is, this neurodiversity, some individuals, for instance, can't really see, they just don't pick up the facial expressions of others, the nonverbals, and so they can't tell if you're being frustrated or not. And so the concept I want to point out here, and by the way, a quick example of this one is I'm on that kind of have trouble with nonverbals at times, and I was just at an event, and see, this is going to have just a tiny little bragging point too. About 120 copies of the book I wrote, the teaching at its best, so a very teaching oriented thing, and the one person said, you're going to sign them, right? And I said, well, of course. And as she walked away, the person that was another person sitting there says, you know, she was kidding, right? And I said, about what? And she says, about signing all those books. They don't expect you to sign 120 books right now, because you're going to start in like 5 minutes. And I said, yeah, but I'm going to have people work in small groups. I can have time to do that. I was trying to backpedal and not look like I was less intelligent in terms of picking up nonverbals. And it's like, of course she was kidding. I didn't know she was kidding. I had no clue she was kidding. And so we have this spectrum for these different abilities. And the concept of, you know, the two ends are easy. I guess just stop and think for a second. If you cannot pick up nonverbals at all and somebody else can pick up every nuance there is, there's the spectrum, and this is what you're talking about. We're all on a spectrum of some kind. The two ends of the spectrum have no interest to me. I think those are kind of boring because they're just cut and dry. Yes and no, black and white, day and night. Those are so easy. It's that spot where we don't totally agree. There is a spot on every spectrum when you and I are talking that I'm going to slide on one side and you're going to slide on the other side. If we moved a little further down the spectrum, we both agree.
Yeah.
That spot where we disagree, and this is one, and I'll tell you what, if there's a book that I can pitch out there for folks, The New Science of Learning, I wrote that book just, it came out last year.
Yeah.
And it's written for students to help them with school and everything, and I realize we're running time, so I'm going to wrap this up right
we're
now.
Good. Mm-hmm.
But I put in that book because I wanted to talk about the dangers of discrimination and everything, but I didn't want to talk about it in a charged way. And so I pointed out day and night. We all know that if it's noon, it's day. We all know that if it's midnight, it's night. That's easy. I mean, anybody can do that. But when does night and day change? There is a moment in the evening as the sun is going down where you and I could be sitting next to each other. And if we say, all right, hit this button when you think day has stopped and night has begun, we're not going to hit the button at the same spot. It's going to be different if you live in Nebraska and I live in New York City. It's going to be different if you live in the country and whatever. I mean, all these differences. That's the interesting point, is that's the discussion point. And so when people start getting all charged about things, you know, don't throw the two ends of the spectrum and start screaming until you're red in your face. Find the spot, the little tiny spot where you're saying, I'm going to slide this way, you slide this way. Let's talk about that spot and why it is where it is. That's exciting to me. The spectrum. I love those middle spots on the spectrum.
Wow. Todd, you have to admit, you have to, you know, we said we're going to be unapologetically, we didn't say this, but I'm saying it now, geniuses. The genius of tying that all together, and that really does tie the concept together with even really some good sage wisdom and advice for folks in terms of how to look at things, and like looking at that middle, and that's where the issues are usually. So that I really appreciate that. That's huge. That is huge. And I want to ask you more questions, but I know that we're running down time here, and I've enjoyed the conversation, Todd. Hopefully you've enjoyed it as well. And we have to do another episode, you know, and dig into some other elements here. But before we go, I wanted to know what sage wisdom additionally do you have for folks, or, you know, some kind of, you know, final words as it relates to this concept. And you had mentioned a book, so I want to make sure you can get a chance to plug any other books or anything. But what would you say to folks as we kind of segue, knowing the spirit of the Universal Love Movement podcast and accessing ability? What final closing thoughts do you have?
Well, first of all, the way I approach life is I have pathological levels of optimism. And I believe change is just gentle pressure relentlessly applied. So those are the kinds of things I live by. But that other concept of trying to find that spot where you see something different from somebody else and just looking for that tiny spot so you can have that conversation. And then this is four things all wrapped together. It's the pathological levels of optimism, persistence, looking for that area where it's, let's not argue, let's find it. That would be really fun. And then seeing the value, that everything has its value. I shouldn't say everything. I suppose there's some that don't, but pretty much everything does. And so looking for what, just because I don't value it doesn't make it bad. It means somebody else's value. There's some, and I have to be careful how I'm saying this, when you look at some ways in which individuals treat other individuals just based on the color of their skin or the accent they have or something, it's hard for me to find the value in that.
Right, it's a little difficult.
But you know what's crazy is I could try. I mean, is there a value in there? And if so, then I can at least appreciate the concept of where they're coming from. And then I can say, but I don't agree with that at all. I don't think it's right to do that. And I wish you didn't do that, but I shouldn't say you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's hard to explain what I'm thinking there, but just trying to find that in there.
And that's an argumentation debate piece. You know, you have to truly understand a person's point of view before you can even, you know, before you can truly disagree. So, and I hear what you're saying, like, try to see where they're coming from, the value, even if you disagree, so that then you can truly understand why you even are not aligned. And it's a big thing for us. So I really appreciate that, Todd. And I wanted to tell you this last thing as we go. Today is I found out the Boxes song. It's by Malvina Reynolds, and it was created in 1962. So it was first released by Pete Seeger, and it's I'd ask that you look it up and everyone else. It was a social satire about the development of suburbia and associated conformist middle class like attitudes about track housing and things like that. So yeah,
so that's why it was the theme song for Weed.
Yeah, that's why.
Okay. We both know how the internet works.
So earlier what we were talking about the Boxes, what I'll say is thank you all for tuning into the Universal Love Movement podcast series, this special series on accessing ability. I really am thankful for Todd, for you being here today. And just, you know, the thing that I'll say in closing, like I say, is that we all have unique abilities waiting to be accessed. Let's celebrate them. Let's celebrate ourselves and, you know, redefine how we're looking at. So Todd, thank you so much for your time today. And I really do appreciate it and looking forward to future conversation. And thank you all for listening.
Thank you much, Carl. Appreciate you. And this was a fabulous conversation. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, sir.